Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the AI Comic Pod. This is episode 53. We are finally, and this has been a very, very long time coming, talking about Thor Ragnarok. Joining me as always is the one and only Stu Bridson. How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, mate. Yeah.
Have the drugs recited a little bit? You were feeling a bit emotional on Twitter the other day about our
two-year
anniversary.
I'm kind of coming off them, so I'm on a bit of a come-down, so I'm back to being a miserable cunt again.
Yeah, I thought that might happen. We are expletives about 12 seconds in. That's quite impressive, even for you. We've also got a first-time guest, which is great. I'd say, crazily enough, this might be the first time this year we could say that. No, Ali, don't forget Ali, sorry. But we don't do this often enough. So we've got a guy who's been a big supporter of ours, interacts with us loads. From my personal opinion, got really good taste in all things film and comics and music and everything. We interact a lot on Twitter. It's Simon Dowling, known as Hefty Horse on Twitter. How you doing, mate? You okay?
Well, yeah, I'm very, very honored to be here, and thank you both so much for having me on the pod.
It's a pleasure. Well, mate, we can confirm pleasure. He's neither hefty nor a horse. So it is just a clever name.
I'm not.
It is.
Bojack Horseman or anything. I'm not. I'm a man with a horse face.
That's
on the
what
other
I imagine.
Don't worry.
Yeah, that's what we've got. That's what I've got in my head, man. I do. Or I've got some kind of Father Ted scene where there's some kind of horse in there. There's something in there.
My lovely horse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone throwing sugar lumps over me. Yeah, that's me. That's what I did. That's what they know me as over here in Ireland.
I don't think I can keep my composure now. I'm just going to go off and I'll leave you to it, and I'm going to go and watch the episode of Father Ted and just be happy for the rest of the week, for the month, for the year. No, we're here for good reason. We're here to talk about Thor Ragnarok, but because it's first time having you on, and we do this very infrequently nowadays, we are doing our legendary quiz. As always, we're extremely prepared. We came up with these questions approximately 12 minutes before the podcast happens. Stu, you've got the questions, man. Would you like to do the honours?
I have. Right. Now, we've tried to go easy on this one because we've only seen the film like once or twice. And
it's a bit cruel.
And as much as anything, it's really hard making quiz questions for a film that you've only seen once. So thankfully, Google's helped me out. So we'll start with an easy one. Question one: what does Fire Lord Surtur reveal is the secret to his power? Anyone?
No.
Well, this isn't a good start. Gags 1.5.
Gags is feeling confident. Feeling confident.
It's his crown.
Still nothing.
The crown's
if you don't know it,
yeah, sorry, yeah, no, okay.
Question number
That's
two:
bad.
When Thor is walking around on Earth, what does he disguise Mjolnir as?
Umbrella.
Correct, yes. He does. There we go. Right, so you only need half a point, and then Gags is your bitch.
Can I get half a point if I know what it was in the comic books, or is that just me being really, really cheeky?
No, that's you being
I just want to beat Gags.
You've got plenty of time.
Really
I'm pretty sure you will.
Okay.
Question 3. What is the name of Korg's friend who he carries around even when he thinks he's dead?
I'm going to say George.
Nope, it's Meek. M-I-E-K, Meek.
Might be the accent. You're getting really confused with there, but we'll move on.
Okay. Now, this is one of Rory's ones, so you can, hashtag film wanker. Question 4. Name one film which Taika Waititi has previously directed.
What are we doing in the shadows?
No. Well, that's not the question, dude. But, yeah, that's an answer. The question was, which Stu has clearly not read, is name a film that Taika Waititi has previously directed. What's her name? What's the actress? Rachel House, who plays Topaz, one of the body
fans. Oh, I know that, though. That's Hunt for the Wildebeest.
There you go.
Well, there you go.
Close enough, Hunt for the Wildebeest.
There you go.
We'll take the Wildebeest.
The Wildebeest.
I'm not sure why I didn't run with that title.
I only just realised that one. As I was saying, I was like, that doesn't sound right, does it?
She's also an eagle versus shark. We'll give you that, man. Yeah, 1 point for that. So you're on 2.
Okay.
Two, last question.
Question 5. What does Thor have to say in order to activate the Quinjet?
Who is the strongest Avenger? I know, that's what he says to not activate it.
Little bit of a clue. It's an Easter egg for the first Avengers film. It's something that Tony Stark calls Thor when he meets him.
You'll kick yourself.
I remember. I know. No, I'm blanking.
It's Point Break.
But
you're right. He does. He says like strongest Avenger and stuff like that, and God of Thunder.
Yeah, he goes through a whole long list of things. Yeah.
Okay, we always ask you, you don't qualify for the bonus question, but we always ask it you anyway, just to see if you know it. Now, this is a bit of a dick question. when they're on
it's not as bad as how many T's in Scott Pilgrim. I'll never forgive you for that.
No. You were asking for that one.
I was, yeah.
What is Valkyrie's scrapper number? So she's referred to by the Grandmaster as scrapper number something.
210.
Not a million miles away, 142.
Not bad. Well, I got two.
You got two, so still beat Gags.
Like we said, man, a lot of the things you go, shit, I knew that.
I know,
You know, but equally, if you don't know it, you don't know it. And it's weird what sticks in your head and what doesn't. And yeah,
I only would have got two of them. I only would have got the first two, the crown and the umbrella, because I couldn't remember what Meek's name was.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah. Even though I was thinking about it earlier.
I know, it's one of those that even when you said it to me on text, I still read it and can't quantify it in my head.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
So, I don't know how this has performed at the box office, but I know it started exceptionally well, Stu. You're usually the man for this. But
bloody hell. I've just had a quick look. Last global, 833.2 million.
Jesus Christ.
Off a budget of 180. That's
mad.
That's got to be putting it in like the top 10.
Yeah. Yeah, that's got to be pretty high, man, because I know neither of the previous Thor films, I don't think, maybe one of the Iron Man films grossed really, really well. But I don't think Winter Soldier came out or Civil War as high as we expected it to. I think they did pretty well, I think, but That's pretty exceptional.
That's crazy.
And I would say that's a lot to do with actually the gross for Civil War is over $1 billion. 1.15 billion. Which is mad. I think the hype on this one is the key difference, because it was a trilogy that was, let's be honest, kind of fizzling out and going nowhere. I think we've both talked about on regular occasions, Stu, that the first had its merits, but we didn't like certain aspects of it, particularly One Woman Who Makes Your List, the chemistry between those.
I'm just having a quick look at the worldwide box office.
So
Ragnarok now is just below Spider-Man Homecoming. It's not far off Guardians of the Galaxy 2. It's above Doctor Strange. It's above Ant-Man. It's made more than Guardians 1, Winter Soldier. It's
going to make a lot more than Justice League, isn't it?
It's made more than more than half of the films in the MCU so far.
Yeah.
Grossing over $1 billion, you've got Avengers, Iron Man 3, Age of Ultron, which is $1.4 billion, and then Civil War is $1.1 billion. Avengers, the first one, was $1.5 billion. So the two Avengers films between them is just shy of $3 billion global.
I reckon the next one's going to do $2 billion on its own.
I was going to say that.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Last time I saw it, it was about five or six, and I thought it'd stop at about seven, which is still like $150 million more than any of the other four films, I think. So they will be so, so pleased with that.
Yeah, well, that's great news.
Of course they will, because like I was briefly saying, it is a trilogy that was kind of
on its arse
a little bit. Yeah, he was on its arse, man. He was always a great character, and everyone loved him in the Avengers and those elements. Obviously, Loki as well, who's the villain that everyone has all that adulation for. But the solo films themselves just kind of didn't have much purpose or direction, and felt a little bit lost. And this is as left field a move to appoint a director since James Gunn, obviously, did Guardians, because you're taking a director who came off the back of a really small independent group of films, has no real taste of Hollywood, and he's obviously got a very interesting quirk and interesting approach to things, but it's not someone conventional. And I think what we always talk about is that the Marvel are now at a point where they can take these risks, and they seemingly give the directors a lot more license. I mean, this film, Stu, felt like a proper director's film, like we said Guardians was.
Yeah. If you've seen any of the behind-the-scenes footage of Taika Waititi, and you've only got to look at the way he dresses, he's really extravagant. He's got a really good back and forth with Hemsworth and Ruffalo. And it does look like they've just put him in a room and given him a pile of money and just gone, you know what? Do it however you see fit. You know, there doesn't seem to have been any meddling with time constraints or any casting forced on him or any silly editing that people have really picked up on. He seems to have just had complete free rein to do whatever he wanted. And it's, don't forget, this is mostly an original story as well. They've adapted aspects of Planet Hulk, but only about a quarter of the story is probably taken from that. The rest of it is all off the tops of their heads. So it's not like they've even had, you know, a huge wealth of comic material to go to, like Winter Soldier, for example. It's not like they've taken it and done a really faithful adaptation of it. It's mostly just made up, but it seems like a logical conclusion. And I remember saying when we did our Logan review, Thor and Logan have both got the films that they finally deserved.
I agree.
Their third solo outings, they both finally, after disappointing releases, they finally got the film where you can go, right, if they don't make another Thor film now, at least we've got one really good, really faithful depiction of Thor that you can sort of hang your hat on and go, you know what? That's what Thor's like. That's what Logan's like. Whereas the other ones had all had that. You know, we've had a good Iron Man. We've had really three good Captain Americas.
We have had three really good Captain Americas.
And it's only fair that Thor, you know, one of the major Avengers, he's been there since, you know, the very formation of the MCU. It's about time he had a film that people could be proud of. And he must be more happy than anyone to finally have a film that people are talking about and not ragging on for having shit villains and a shit love interest and a shit story. And, you know, it's a complete Thor film. There's obviously little niggly bits about it you could pick up on, but off the top of my head, I can't think of anything that I would say.
No, I don't have anything.
Did something.
Me neither. It's going to be too positive. Just to kind of pick up from there, I think this is the film that we finally see Thor as, you know, actually, he feels like he's more, just a lot more evolved and open, whereas I feel like in the first two films, Hemsworth is just kind of maybe just held back through no fault of his own, I'm sure, but it feels like he's actually been able to just be, it's put a lot more of him into the film, and I think that really comes forward, and he's a fantastic actor, and he's fucking hilarious. I didn't realize he was that, like, because I was thinking before, like, Thor, he's pretty, he kind of has his little bits, but in this film, he's full on, he's just hilarious. So dry as well sometimes, but
he has,
he does it so well.
Very underrated for his comedy timing. You know,
I think he stepped it up. Yeah.
He's really come on leaps and bounds, but that's what he needed. I completely agree with you, mate. Thor has been very, very dry, very, very literal, and they've always leaned on the mythology, haven't they? You know, look, he talks a bit funny and, you know, he's talking in mythology and what have you, but now they've just been able to really just let him go, and there's definitely more Hemsworth in this performance than we've ever had, and that's got to be down to the writing and the director, because if Marvel have given Waititi the free rein, he presumably has passed that on to his cast and said, you know what, go and have fun, you know, Ruffalo, take it away, you know, Kate Blanchett, I just want you to just do what you do, bring your presence onto the screen rather than shackling them all down.
I've just looked it up because I read quite a few things when it came out that he'd kind of gone away and done films which suited that kind of comedy element. So as much as it's a bad film and I had to sit through it because my little boy's a massive Ghostbusters fan, he's the best part about that film by a significant margin. And he's given quite a lot of free rein in there because they're for comedians who do Saturday Night Live.
It must be hard to not pick up comedy timing from people who are regulars on Saturday Night Live. You know, it's one of the
if you hang out with Christine Vig and I can't remember the other blonde who's in it, who's really funny.
Kristen Wiig.
Kristen Wiig, and then the other one who's in Ghostbusters, I can't remember her name, who does a lot of Saturday Night Live, it's quite prominent.
I know the one you mean, I'm going to have to...
Yeah, I know, I can't remember
not
her
Melissa
name,
McCarthy, who's more slapstick kind of humour.
Kate the blonde one, yeah.
Yeah, Kate but McKinnon. They're really funny, and he clearly kind of took elements of that. I think what made me a little bit sick, if I just looked him up, and he's 34 years of old age, and he's a year old, and he just looks like... infinitely better than
I used to look like Chris Hemsworth when I was 34.
That
2 years ago. Give me some credit.
2 years.
Yeah.
I'm 34 and I definitely don't look a thing like him.
But you don't look like a giant horse either, so, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, it swings and roundabouts. And I was going to still talk about the script in this film because it seems incredible. But then I've looked it up and heard interviews and read interviews and stuff. 80% of it is freestyle.
Yeah.
Which is madness for a film. I mean, you often get the comedies like Judd Apatow films, you know, are all freestyle. So I regularly refer back to it whenever we're talking about Ezra Miller because he's annoying as hell in this film. But Trainwreck is basically all freestyle. And there's a really funny Michael Cera kind of sex scene. Not Michael Cera, John Cena sex scene that's all freestyled. And apparently he said it's shot and it took him like hours of doing this. And he's basically butt naked until they got the right amount of script.
That's the Amy Schumer one, isn't it?
That's the Schumer one. But that scene, he's the best thing in that film. That scene's hilarious. And you look at films like this and go, shit, it's more of a comedy freestyling film, you know, than anything produced this year, I'd say. Do you know what I mean? It's probably the funniest film I've seen this year, which is insane. I mean, Guardians 2 had some really genuinely funny moments, but it felt a little bit overplayed at times, whereas this just felt completely natural. And that's what you're saying about a director, Stu, that just the cast were clearly so comfortable in his presence. He got the best out of all of them, to be honest. And I mean, harnessing... all that, you know, Goldblum will turn up and do what Goldblum does, because he's just that batshit crazy. if you see any interview with him, he literally doesn't change. Well,
he's never in character, is he? Jeff Goldblum plays Jeff Goldblum. You just put him in a different costume.
He just put him in a really... Do you know what? I've seen a lot of things said that they probably thought he just turned up in that costume and they rolled with it. Do you know what I mean? That was probably his dress for the day and went, sure, that looks good, actually. Let's use this, you know, because he's just so eccentric, man, and he's just so perfect in this film. Is he the brother or the cousin of the collector?
Brother, I think.
Brother, yeah. And I mean, look at the two actors and how polar opposite they are.
It's just so...
But it works, man. It so works.
Yeah, very much. There's been so much press stuff that's been done. I can't remember seeing a director playing and riffing around with the main stars as much as Taika Waititi. You know, normally you might do the director separately and then you do the stars, but generally you've got like the three of them together and they're just taking the piss out of each other. You would really think that he was one of the cast, not that he's meant to be their boss. And, you know, he's the one that's in charge of a $180 million film. He just he doesn't look serious enough to be a director. But imagine how much fun that must be to work for somebody who just puts you in a room and goes, right, I want you to have a conversation about, you know, that the scene with where they're talking Thor and Hulk about being fire and stuff like that. Imagine Raging how many fire. Takes they've gone through and he's just gone, right, I want you to just bounce off each other. They must have had so much fun coming up with how to do that, rather than just sitting there and reading lines off a page and then reciting it word for word.
You could feel how much fun Ruffalo was having in this role, you know, because I think he's been...
You could
he's been
see him holding back laughter. There was a few times I spotted him when he really looked like he wanted to burst out laughing.
Yeah. And he just definitely. He plays that... I've seen a little bit, right, and Stu, you probably disagree and I do as well, but I've seen a bit of criticism of Hulk for people that don't understand that kind of development.
Basically, just fuck off. He was absolutely brilliant.
I thought he was incredible. I genuinely thought he was incredible, but he plays almost a teenage Groot, doesn't he? He's almost adolescent male, all macho, that kind of element to him. But I mean, he looks, obviously he looked incredible.
The CGI
advancement
come,
in CG is
come
just
on leaps
insane.
And bounds.
Yeah, it looked really good.
And then their fight scene was just, I mean, the whole build up of it. I mean, we can probably go through a little bit of some of the build up to that actually, in terms of the plot. So, the opening scene pretty much told you everything you needed to know about the film, with a really, really funny cameo from Matt Damon. And Loki just basically up to his usual, really. I mean,
Sam Neill as well, and Luke Hemsworth, Hemsworth brother,
and Matt Damon.
It was brilliant. Just
Matt Damon loves the cameo, doesn't he? He absolutely loves the cameo. He's popping up the loads of things for 5 minutes. And I just thought it was really clever because you kind of got that feel of Asgard and where it's like now and all peaceful and Surrey before basically hell breaks loose, you know. And it was an interesting thing. And then you got more of Doctor Strange, which was just great, to be honest. I loved the interplay with Cumberbatch and Hemsworth, and then the brilliant kind of Loki falling for 30 minutes scene, which I just thought was just brilliant. And then you basically got, obviously, Odin playing out his days, really, and ultimately passing on the mantle before Hela can then step in and reign supreme. I mean, we saw in the trailer, Stu, that you pronounce the hammer because I'll always get it wrong.
Mjolnir.
Yeah, I'll sound like Kat Dennings if I do it. But it's destroyed within, is it the first 10 minutes, 15 minutes?
It probably wasn't far off 15 minutes. And one thing that a lot of people noticed, they changed the background in the original setting when Hela breaks the hammer. She breaks it in a really sort of stony, industrial-looking place, and it looked like she destroyed it on Asgard. Mm. And then all of a sudden they decided that they wanted the scene to look a little bit more, I don't know, sort of in line with Odin's death. So they changed it to this.
True. Yeah,
that,
probably.
That field, where was it, in the middle of Norway or?
Yeah, Norway or somewhere. Norway, yeah.
Which is obviously quite fitting with the whole Viking mythology and shit.
And that, people, that was quite people joke well. About all that. Yeah, people joke about, and this film has got one of those elements where people say, oh yeah, it's just a comedy and there's no heart in it and stuff. Actually, the scenes in this film, and there was in Guardians as well, obviously, some pretty poignant scenes. I mean, the Odin's death is pretty heart-wrenching, to be honest, because he's been quite a prominent figure. I don't think he's had as much to do as you'd maybe liked at times from an actor of that caliber. But I found it quite shocking, actually.
It was. I was more shocked that they killed him off so soon, that they went really straight in. But they kind of had to, and arguably that's one of the major pivotal points of Thor's arc, is for so long his dad was trying to prepare him to be the rightful king and to be less of the petulant child and more of the grown-up adult that he needs to be in order to be a good leader. And him dying kind of cements that within him. And obviously that the loss of Mjolnir does as well, because for so long he's relied on his hammer. And he's never really had to think too much about things, because he's always had this incredible weapon that could pretty much do anything to anyone. So he never really had to rely on his cunning and his wits. And his arc overall, when he becomes the literal God of Thunder by the end of the film, was brilliant to see. And they've perfectly placed that now for going into Infinity War, because his power levels have just gone through the roof. Which is obviously going to be handy when you come face to face with Thanos.
Well, it is. Yeah, you would hope. But it's probably not going to be enough. That's the thing about Thanos, which is so interesting. And we'll probably touch upon a little bit when we talk about the post-credit in the film, which leads on to the kind of... it leads on to the Comic-Con or, footage rather than maybe the release trailer at this stage. So it's interesting. Yeah, like you said... Hammer loss is huge, and
I thought it was
my favorite. Yeah, go for it, man.
Oh no, sorry, I was going to say on that. It was kind of interesting when he's talking when he meets back up with Hulk, and he basically just kind of tells Hulk what he's missed, and the first thing that he mentions is that he lost his hammer. Not that his dad died.
Yeah.
It's like the hammer is like the most important thing in his mind.
Yeah. He's had a really busy couple of days. Yeah. He lost his hammer and this happened and I got banished. And it's
shades of Luis, isn't it, from Ant-Man?
It's shades of Luis.
Got the van.
Yeah. It's shades of Luis, man. I felt a bit of Luis in that kind of speech. And you feel a bit of Luis in the patter and the kind of, approach in the dialogue in this film, which
can only be a good thing, because the whole MCU needs a load more Luis.
Yeah, who cares about Infinity Wars, man? Luis is back in Ant-Man next year. It's fine. No one cares. Ultimately, Luis is going to take down Thanos. I think that's
with a story.
Just going to nail it with a story, and the guy will just be shot.
There you go. For once, it's Rory making predictions that are never
going to
come true.
That is a bold prediction.
That's a serious prediction. Yeah.
It's going to happen. Michael Peña is going to rule the galaxy. but yeah, I mean, that obviously that opening moment, you've got the scenes with Hela, and then I loved the way Kate Blanchett looked in this film. I thought she looked really menacing, but had that kind of cheeky element which the villains kind of do in this kind of universe as such. But she's pretty dark, man. And there's some quite, like we're saying about the emotional scenes, and we'll probably talk about the interaction with Tessa Thompson's character, Valkyrie, and Thor, and, obviously Hela and Valkyrie's kind of interactions when they have the flashbacks in the film. But she's pretty badass. And again, one of the characters that people haven't said maybe got enough out of with her, but I thought she held her own as a really strong villain. Stu, you're the villain expert on this podcast.
I don't know much of her, but I did some reading up before, and she's not a comic book adaptation of Hela. She's kind of a composite of three different characters that they've put together. And I think a lot of that is because they wanted to come up with a character that was going to suit Kate Blanchett. as much as anything, and it would have been difficult for them to do the literal depiction of death without having a woman who's 6'4", which pretty much leads you down Gwendolyn Christie's path.
I was about to say she's the only one that could
she's
do that.
She's the only
that,
one
right?
I can yeah. think that would be, because she's supposed to be.
Probably Jeff Goldblum's henchwoman question we asked about. She was pretty
yeah.
intimidating, but she wouldn't lead a film.
And Kate yeah. Blanchett was brilliant. I would be very concerned by anyone that found any problems with her performance.
I think they wanted more to work with her.
She
maybe
was
more
terrifying.
Scripts, more.
She was also yeah. funny. She definitely gave off the attitude of being a bit of a spoiled brat. You know, she
oh, yeah.
clearly had huge amount daddy of daddy issues because yeah. you know, and it was. But that side of it, that was a really good story. You know, where they were marching throughout the Nine Realms and they were just taking everything yeah. over. And then all of a sudden...
I love the reveal on the ceiling, you know, the reveal.
That
when
was
they,
brilliant.
They kind of
oh, yeah.
It's
beautiful.
And then
yeah.
all of a sudden Odin just turns his back on her because she's got a little bit murdery and a little bit out of control. And, you know, then she spends the next few millennia just locked away in hell. So it was...
Yeah.
And again, that's a pretty dark thing for Marvel to do. Because the other Thor films have been a bit more slapstick, even with Loki. You know, Loki's
yeah.
been a bit of a, you know, murderous psychopath, but he's always done it with a smile on his face and a song in his heart. And she was like genuinely
when he murdered Coulson in Cold Blood, it was song in his heart moment. Yeah,
yeah. yeah. Did you not see when he's escaping? He's got his tap shoes on.
Yeah, to be honest, knowing Tom Hiddleston, he probably would have a good go, wouldn't he, to be honest.
And he'd be fucking fabulous as well.
Yeah, he would be. Yeah, he would be.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And I mean, talking of villains, obviously, you know, Loki is also quite pivotal.
And brilliant.
Simon, were you happy to have him? Oh, in a full
so
role,
happy.
Obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. He's probably one of my favorite. He's definitely up there in my favorite baddies now. I just think he's yeah. just fantastic. He's a great actor. He plays that role of going back and forth that you never really know if he's actually turned or not. And you yeah. can never, you can just never trust him. And I loved how there's times when you didn't know if it was if it was actually, you know, him there or the way he can kind of...
The hologram
of himself, and how Thor had to kind of test that out by throwing stones at him a few times.
And when it probably led to my favourite line in the film when Korg says, piss off, ghost, which relates to that bit. And I literally, that's my favourite gif of the year and probably my favourite line of the year. It's just hilarious. it's just piss off, ghost. And yeah, you don't trust Loki at any moment, but they have that great brotherly kind of relationship and interplay. And there's some great scenes, you know, where they both turn up with the machine guns. As such, that's just ace. And when they play the scene, when he says he doesn't want to do that scene again, and he says, help, my brother is dying. And and he literally launches him as a
let's do get help.
Projectile. Yeah, exactly.
Can we do get
let's
help?
Do get help.
And he's like, not again.
Yeah, and he's always like the younger brother that's been pushed around, and you know, that's where that all comes from. You know, I guess.
I think like the thing that I like about him is that I want him to turn and I want him to be better, and then you almost do kind of fall for his own. His, you know, you're like, actually, maybe he has turned now. And you're like, yes. And then you're like, did it again.
Well, but he's definitely flip-flopped again, because it's been confirmed.
He's flip-flopped so many times, doesn't he?
He's definitely on Team Thanos when it comes to Infinity War.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
he's
back to being a lovable
Thanos. He might flip back, though. He could. He might flip back. I think he might go back, yeah. He'll probably go back and forth around 5 times, I'd say.
He doesn't ever play. He plays what side fits him, I think, in that given moment. Do you know what I mean? And he does care about his brother, and you can feel that kind of relationship.
Yeah.
There are some redeeming moments in this film, which you know, ultimately, you know, it's really likable. Again, one of my favourite comedic scenes, and he doesn't even speak, I don't think, is when Hulk bursts into the arena. And the look on Loki's face is just absolutely priceless. Well, he's literally scared senseless because he knows, you know, what happens. And he's just, you know, he's giving it the full, you know, celebration when Thor knocks him out, essentially, or feels like he's knocked him out, because he wants Hulk to lose so badly because of how badly beaten up he was in that one moment in Avengers. That's just priceless. And he's already, you know, he's already basically become like a right-hand man to Goldblum. And he's
been on the planet how much longer?
Do you know what I mean? He's been on the planet another week, and he's
basically
and he's managed to get his way in.
I love that about him. Yeah,
it's just him in a nutshell, that he can just, if he gets someone's ear, he's in control, basically. You know, you just can't, he's just so persuasive. It's great. Stu, anything on Hiddleston, Loki?
It's well known that I love him. He's easily one of the best things that Marvel have ever done.
Yeah.
There's not really much else to add other than
I think he's one of the best characters they've ever done, not just best villains, do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, he is. He's definitely one of the best. When Thor points to Hulk, tells Hulk, and he goes, "Look, Loki's here," and he points up at him, and Loki just kind of sinks into his chair, and you can hear his arsehole clench at the sight of the Hulk. And he's obviously having flashbacks to when he's thrown him around Stark Tower.
Yeah.
He
also has a great line when he says he's been falling for 30 minutes, which we said before, but the way he delivers that line is just perfect.
And the story about the when he talks about when he turned Thor into a snake. That was one of my favourite bits of the film.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean, other characters, we can talk about Goldblum, we kind of have briefly, but he's effortlessly cool, as you'd expect, Stu, in this role. I mean, when you see him do this, I couldn't imagine a single other actor playing that part.
I might be able to think of someone if I had time, but it needs to be somebody who's completely over the top, really, really eccentric.
Yeah. There's not many like him, you know.
No, and he was another one where he was actively encouraged to improv a lot of his lines.
He probably didn't bother to learn them, which is
funny. I would imagine
he probably didn't have any lines, I'd say.
He was probably given a framework and told,
you know.
He'd
probably given a blank script and go, come for the part, just dress up whichever way you feel.
You look at the scene where Thor comes in and he's strapped to the chair. He was probably told, you know, he's going to come in. We want you to ask him a few questions. Loki's going to come in, and probably that's it. And then the rest of it is just off the top of his head. Because when you've been around
when they talk about the death stick, you know, the stick that vaporizes people.
Yeah,
like, no, we don't need that. Yeah, the melt stick. We don't need that this time. We don't always need the melt stick. again, you just felt like how improvised that kind of script is. And the planet itself, I just thought, looked really cool. It looked completely different again from what we've seen before. And this film visually, I mean, Stu, it's just something else, isn't it? I mean, it's Guardians on acid, really.
Bits of this reminded me of the Transformers animated film.
Nice.
When they go to the planet of the Junkions.
That's I can feel that. Yeah, it's like the very cool version of the shit Walking Dead clan, isn't it? It's like it's like the space version.
Only they speak in complete sentences, and they haven't got stupid fucking bowl-head haircuts. But as soon as you land on Sakaar, one of my favourite characters for the whole thing came in, and that was Valkyrie. I thought she was absolutely brilliant.
And I'm pleased to see that
Tessa Thompson, very soon after this, was added to the roster. I don't think she's in for Infinity War. I think she's in for Gauntlet.
For
whatever the fourth Avengers film
is. I reckon it is Gauntlet, unless they've decided to change the name. I think Zaldana completely dropped the ball on that one.
It probably is, and it makes sense. I think, to be honest, they got the naming wrong. This one should have been called Thanos Quest, because that's the comic that it's adapting. And then the next one should be Infinity War, because that's the book that it's adapting. But anyway,
I think Thanos Quest sounds a little bit shit, to be honest. I don't think that would sell.
I don't think it would
work. No, but I know what you mean. I know what you mean. When they're talking about Infinity Wars, they're talking about it being a heist movie. Do you know what I mean? He's going around trying to collect up all the stones. So I'm quite intrigued how that's going to play out. But we've already done our ridiculously overreaction pod to the Infinity Wars 2-minute trailer. And I'm sure we'll do more again when we talk about films to come next year.
Tessa Thompson had a really good arc in that. Because again, by the time we see her,
she did.
She's pretty much disgraced and she's given up and she's borderline alcoholic. But by the end of it, when she throws her armor back on, she's every inch the Asgardian warrior. And she looked fantastic in the armor. She was very...
My favorite scene in terms of the scene to take away, you know, is that scene when she's strutting up in that full armor.
Yeah.
That visually...
When they're on the Bifrost.
Just perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And that looked so much better than it did in the trailers. They polished the CGI up so well.
It was smooth, man, this film. It's really smooth and polished, like you said. It didn't feel, you know, it felt gritty a little bit when it needed to, but it did. It was very, very polished. And in any other kind of context, it might not have worked. It's just that it's so offbeat. It just felt bang on.
And that's one thing that the Thor films have always got. They've always got the visual aspect, because Asgard itself is an incredible sight, especially when you've seen it in IMAX. You know, Asgard is this gigantic golden city, and it's always looked great. It's just pretty much everything else that's then let it down, whereas now they've finally got the script, the characters and the feeling to back up those visuals and the effects. And the effects in it have been absolutely incredible. As we said before, Hulk has never looked this good. It looks like they've somehow taken Ruffalo and hulked him up, because he's got his face, but he's about 2 foot taller and about 500 pounds heavier.
Yeah.
And he looks so human and realistic. Korg looks like a real pile of walking stone. It's the VFX in this are just so good. And this seems like a logical time to just start talking about Korg.
Yeah, I think let me and Si talk a bit about Tessa Thompson, because
go on. She's lovely.
She probably stole the show. I mean, her character probably had the most emotional depth. Visually, she was just perfect in that role, and she had the best arc in terms of, you know, I mean, Thor's arc is incredible. I think Chris Hemsworth is just brilliant in this film, but I do think she took everybody by surprise.
Definitely.
And you know, it's not a film that will ever get kind of nominations for things, and it's sad that it wouldn't, because in my opinion it's a great, great film. But she's the one that I would look at and go, yeah, if you're talking best supporting actress or something, if it was a maybe alternative Oscars where they don't just do things that are just built for Oscars. She's the kind of character and she's the kind of actress that really just kept you focused when there's a lot going on around her, and just fit the part so well in terms of the humour, in terms of the emotion, in terms of the kind of connection she had with all the other characters, because she obviously had those close connections with Hulk, certainly with Thor, and their relationship is really intriguing.
It seems like what they've done in terms of that, they've not made it obvious, but she seems like a pretty good pair, a good love interest for Thor. Because I always wanted him to do Thor and Lady Sif, but with Jamie Alexander going missing, they've confirmed that, because we saw the other Warriors 3, and Lady Sif wasn't in the film because she's the lead in Blind Spot on NBC, but because she wasn't in this, she's just presumed missing now. So in theory, they could bring her in, but there's probably no point now with the Warriors 3 dead, because she'd just be on her own. And this seems, you know, if they're going to pair Thor with anyone, he needs to be with an Asgardian woman, someone who's as strong and as much of an arse kicker as he is. And she just destroyed everyone that came anywhere near her, you know, and she's the equivalent of like Asgardian special forces, isn't she? You know, the Valkyrie were legendary warriors that people trembled in their boots at the sight of the Valkyrie. So
almost a similar feel to the ladies that are in Black Panther, I would say.
Yeah,
in terms of that kind
similar to like the. You never know when it comes to the fourth Avengers film, they could become like a kindred spirit. You know, she might be like, oh, so there's actually, you know, female warriors on Earth as well when she meets the Dora Milaje. That's a really good parallel, mate. Look at you paying attention to things.
Oh, check me out. Right, we'll pay attention to our guest. What do you want to say about Tessa Thompson, mate?
It's not really too much to add. Yeah, I was very, very impressed with her. I think I might have fallen in love with her a little bit after watching that.
I think we all
totally logical.
My girlfriend doesn't listen into this now.
It's all right. Yeah,
we're in the room. I think she also feels that way as well, so that's fine.
Hey, who wouldn't be attracted to a man named Hefty Horse on Twitter? I mean, Jesus Christ.
I thought she was just, I just thought it was really nice to see like a strong character who was kind of, she was quite unique as well, how she was just, you could just tell she was on a bit kind of like a downswing. And there was this whole back thing about her that you wanted to find out more. And you just kind of get little bits at a time. And then she just comes into her own. But she's not too... I never felt like she was trying to kind of take over.
No,
you know,
I agree with
that. I mean,
that.
Which worked really well. It wasn't like she was trying to be like, oh, look at me. I'm better than all these people and I want to be the best. Like, it just worked. And she was great. And she was quite... She kind of had her moments of kind of like comedy as well. And she was quite dark as well. Like it's a fairly dark past again. Like I think there is definitely a lot of darkness in the film.
It's just
when
delivered
you look
in
at
a
it,
way
you know, it's just done in such a different way, isn't it? It's not too, maybe it's just not so.
It's got a kind of
obvious.
Like comedy element to
it
in that regard. It does. It has a darker edge to it, but ultimately because you're rooting for who you're rooting for, and because Korg is in this film, you don't really care about anything else.
What a segue.
I just find myself occasionally, when Stu mentioned Korg before, I was just smiling to myself, which I find utterly bizarre because, you know, I'm not on any kind of medication or like Stu, and it just doesn't, you know, it doesn't work normally. But as characters go, I mean, stroke of genius to Taika Waititi casting himself as the breakout star of this film almost, which is mental. He's just a big pile of rocks. But I've never laughed so much at a character in plenty of years, to be honest.
Yeah, there was the scene that they did. They released a bit where Thor's talking to Korg about the loss of his hammer. that was debuted on someone like Jimmy Kimmel. I didn't actually believe that was going to be in the film because it was too funny and slapstick. I thought that was a little, you know, like Thor and was it Daryl, the guy he was living with on Earth? I thought it was like a little viral sort of behind-the-scenes shot of it. So when that actually came on in the cinema, I couldn't believe that they'd actually put that in where he's... You know, it's like you've lost a part of yourself, and trying to make it really deep and meaningful about his fucking hammer.
But then what he says, and the hammer pulled you off, bro? But the hammer pulled you off, and he's just like, no. It's not what happened. It's not that the hammer pulled me off. It's just because he said, you rode the hammer? No, I didn't ride the hammer. I kind of rode with the hammer. It pulled me away.
I just kind of spun it around, and then, you know, it makes me fly.
it's trying to describe what it is to someone. It's just hilarious. And I could just imagine those scenes. If people weren't in stitches watching that play out, I don't know on set how I would have, if I wouldn't have been able to cope with that kind of humor, man.
Well, especially that when accent you see what well, white PC so was wearing. Because he's wearing a full mocap suit, and then he's got this giant thing on his head. Because obviously people need to be looking about 8 foot in the air, and he's only about 5.5 foot tall. He's not a big man, and he looks bugger wearing the mocap suit. I mean, at least when Mark Ruffalo's doing it, he's just sort of normal. But yeah, I would love to think that there was a meeting and they were talking about Korg, and they were describing who he needed to be like, and all of a sudden he just stood up from the table in his Hawaiian shirt and went, this is the role I was born for. I was born to play this character. And they're like, what? You're going, no, you can't do this. He's like, fuck off. No. I'm the director.
I'm going to do a very strong Kiwi accent. Do you know what I mean? Like the kind of, because I've heard him.
If he wasn't Kiwi, you'd think he was being a little bit over the top, a little bit racist. It's like he's dialed up to 11.
Right.
It's like if I wanted to do a Kiwi accent, that's how it would come out sounding, and that's why I'm not going to do one, because I'd possibly offend people.
Yeah, I know, and we have a couple of listeners from New Zealand, so I don't want to go that far, because news spreads. It's a small country. We don't want to offend the whole. Otherwise, we'll have a lawsuit against the whole of New Zealand.
I have to say, it's possibly my favorite accent of all time. It's such a funny accent. I don't know why. I mean, any film that he's made, he just has me cracking up. It's just so
funny. He's a very, very funny man. He's a naturally very funny.
He's hilarious.
Man.
I would be surprised if he hasn't written himself now into the Marvel bigwigs good books.
They're talking about making a fourth Thor film.
He wants to do a
Korg spin-off,
man.
Waititi wants to do another Thor film, and Chris Hemsworth wants to do another Thor film. So that's,
I think this goes.
That's good, yeah.
That's all you need, isn't it? Because everything else falls in line once you've got your director and your main star. Because Tom Hiddleston will come back and do it
as well. I've got a couple of cold quotes because there's just so many.
All I can hear now is piss off Ghost and him kicking the fucking wall.
Well, that's my favourite thing. It's probably my favourite thing. But even the opening one, when he meets him, he's, you know, says, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Korg. I'm kind of the leader in here. I'm made of rocks, as you can see, but don't let that intimidate you. You don't need to be afraid unless you're made of scissors. Just a little rock, paper, scissors joke for you. I mean, if anyone said that, and the way I read it with my accent, that sounds really unfunny. But because you can picture his Kiwi accent doing it in that way, it just works, man. It's just hilarious. Have I got any more? I don't know if I do. We talked about the hammer pulling him off, which is just genius.
The bit at the end when Meat
wakes up, when he thinks he's... His mate's dead,
and he's just been carrying his carcass around for hours and hours on end.
He just wakes up.
I can't remember what he says, but he's just something like, he's like, oh, he's alive, or oh, he's okay.
He's like, he's like asking him where he's from.
Korg says, when Asgard's completely in bits, he says, the damage is not too bad. As long as the foundations are still strong, we can rebuild this place. It'll become a haven for all peoples and aliens of this universe. God. And then Asgard explodes and he says, now those foundations are gone. Sorry.
Isn't that the way the film ends? It pretty much. It ends on like a Korg joke.
Yeah,
brilliant.
It pretty much does. Yeah. And I kind of love
just
that.
Found
because
another
it,
one.
Go on.
He says, Meek, where are you from? Oh, Meek's dead. I stepped on him during the fight on the bridge and I've been feeling so guilty. I've been carrying him around with me ever since. Oh, wait, Meek's alive.
Oh, my God. It's just, do you know what? I've seen this film once and I could just watch it over and over and over again. I've wanted to watch it so much since it came out and just haven't watched it since. But when it comes out on Blu-ray or whatever, I don't think it's the kind of film that will replace Scott Pilgrim in film when I need cheering up. Do you know what I mean? It's just 2 hours of pure perfection, in my opinion. And in terms of films of this year, there's been some really good releases, and I was kind of trying to do a top 10. And I'm not doing it until I've seen The Disaster Artist and the
Great. It's very good.
Is it? Yeah, because it'll probably make my top 10, but I don't think it'll top this. And then Last Jedi, I think I might secretly love, but I've just suddenly kind of come around to the hype on it. But I'm not sure they're going to outdo this film. And I think only kind of maybe Blade Runner and Logan
as well, yeah.
But this film, honestly, it's not just about comic books. It's not just about anything. This film is one of my favourite films of recent years. Or if not, I reckon after a few more watches of all time. And people think that's mental, but I've never enjoyed a film. You know, I went along with my little boy and he didn't get all of it. But he got most of it and he loved it. And I could see why, do you know what I mean? Cause it's so visual, but then it's really funny and it's really clever and it's just different. It felt entirely different. And for a film where everyone says, oh, it's like Guardians this, it's Guardians that, it's not. It felt for me just almost completely original. I don't think I've seen a film quite like this before. And that's why it's so special when you've got some big films come out this year, and this just stands apart for me. It really is that good.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. It's been a good year for comic films. It's been a very good year.
Yeah, bar one big film. It's been a great year.
Yeah, bar one for them. You don't even need to say what it is.
Can you come on when we do Justice League? Because I'm going to get...
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I can do it, yeah.
Come on. I'd love you to come on. And Stu can have one on his side, and I'll have one on my side.
I don't need anyone on my side.
You're going to be really aggressive on that podcast. I kind of we almost fell out on Twitter, didn't we, the other day?
No, you had a hissy fit and got sand in your vagina.
Well, essentially what happened. You were trying to gang up on me with random people on Twitter. Oh, Jason Roberts is a very nice man. He would never gang up on me. But, you know, it's a strange film that divided people. And I kind of like that it's done that, Justice League. But this film, let's be honest, universally, I've not known anyone say a bad word about it that's seen it. And everyone, critics, fans, the numbers are mad, like we said. Do you know what I mean? It really is. It's been a wholehearted success. And
I cannot believe it's grossed over like 800 million. I can't either. Staggering.
I don't know what Hunt for the Wilder People did, right? But his last film, Stu, have you seen it on Netflix?
Have a guess.
I know.
You should definitely watch it. You should watch it. It's really good.
Because it's him. And
its budget was $2.5 million and it made $23 million.
Yeah, exactly. It's the kind of film that it's very Taika, as you'd expect. But the kid in it, Julian Dennison, who plays Ricky, is hilarious. And he's going to be in Deadpool 2.
Is he? Oh, that's brilliant. I didn't know that.
Yeah, which I thought is great. And I think it really is, Stu, a film you'd like. It's completely bizarre. But if you give it 90 minutes, 2 hours of your life, you will really enjoy it. And it just, you go from that to this. I mean, you couldn't get more polar opposites. That's the most small independent film going that's a big success from last year. And then you come to making one of the biggest grossing superhero films. It's absolutely madness. I mean, it's just genius direction, and it's getting that cast given their full potential, really. I mean, everyone in this, like we said, just absolutely nails it.
You'd be hard pushed to think that this isn't going to open a lot of doors for him as well.
Everyone's going to go, just give him whatever he wants to make, and he'll make an incredible film. I think, you know, yeah, I think James Gunn's the same, and there's other directors that just Marvel gives directors creative license at the minute to really make special films, and Fox did it with James Mangold when he made Logan, and it's nice to see. Same with Deadpool, obviously. You know, it's nice to see directors getting their vision rather than it being a little bit forced, and I think that really does help the film process, and it seems to help the actors, because talking about the films that we've had out and how much we've got out of these actors in recent films, and you know, I don't think Hugh Jackman's delivered a much better performance in his career than Logan, if he has at all. No. And he's been up for Oscars and all sorts in other roles. And, you know, Hemsworth has done nothing like this. I think Tessa Thompson's done nothing of this kind of nature. And
no, she's done just a lot of period dramas, hasn't she, and stuff like yeah. that, I think.
She was in Westworld as well.
Yeah, she was.
But she
was
only
really
had a very
good
small
in
role.
Westworld.
Yeah,
yeah, there's a few characters that popped up. We talked about the guy in Westworld that was in Punisher recently. So it's interesting, these kind of crossovers. So, you know, the villain in The Punisher, one of the villains, was in Westworld. So it's weird, man. A lot of these actors are just kind of doing the scenes in the right kind of roles now. And people are, I don't know, man, they've got some good agents anyway. They keep picking the right things.
I would like to see them give him another Marvel franchise to do as well.
Even if he does,
what would you pick him?
I want to see. I want to see a Spider-Man film. To be honest,
that'd be good.
I could see him. I would like to see him do maybe a spin-off of Spider-Man, maybe Miles Morales or someone like that, where it's a little bit younger and he could be a bit
quirky as well.
But yeah, that's a good question. Who could he do? Because it needs to be somebody now.
It's not good. You can't see Captain Marvel because it's going to be played out in a very different way, I think.
Yeah.
That's going to be too serious because she's got a very serious backstory.
It could be interesting if they ever got the rights, if he did something with X-Men.
Yeah. That'd
be pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a good scope with X-Men.
Or the Scott, I don't know, even he could make a good Fantastic Four film because someone needs to, you know what I mean? Yeah, there's a load of scope, and that's the thing. Me and Stu, maybe we'll pod about it as a reaction if this Disney Fox deal does go ahead, which I think it will.
It sounds like
it's a matter of when, not if.
Yeah, it might well be the new year by this stage.
It's pretty exciting anyway.
Disney wouldn't do a Deadpool R-rated. I'm like, well, maybe they would.
They might do it.
You know, they do things that are pushing boundaries, and they do know that their audience is not just atypical Star Wars fan or atypical comic book fan or atypical animation fan.
How many films are we now into the MCU? Is this 16 films in? They know what works and what doesn't work now. They know better than anyone. If they were to turn around and say, oh, we're doing a Deadpool 3, and it's going to be rated 15, they know instantly people are going to slag it off. And the one thing Marvel don't want is people slagging them off. So
and Ryan Reynolds as well, you know, he won't. I think he'd probably actually walk if they didn't do what he wanted. So I think, you know, he might be the person to kind of take them over the line with it.
Yeah, completely agree.
Stu, does this rank highly? How highly would this rank in your order?
It's hard to say because the order very often changes apart from one and two, which is still Civil War and Winter Soldier.
Is that your one and two?
Yeah. I don't see them changing until Infinity War comes out, when I'm hoping that everything gets shifted down. Ragnarok could be a top five. It's comfortably top 10, possibly top five. I'm still not sure whether I preferred this or Homecoming. Homecoming was really something else.
Homecoming was different and it did feel fresh. And it was nice that Spider-Man, again, another character, getting probably the kind of, you know, rebirth that they deserved, you know what I mean? And the kind of standalone film that's really been needed for a long time. But I think this was different, man. I think this was just new. This felt different, you know. And I think Homecoming had those elements, but not as many. I felt like it's a story that's been told a little bit before. So,
what do you think, Simon? Where would it be for you?
It's hard to say. I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I loved Spider-Man so much. I mean, he's probably my favorite in the world. I mean, he's like, ever since I was a kid, it's always been Spider-Man. Has always been my favorite. So. And I didn't mind Spider-Man 1 and 2, but the rest of the films are so bad that I was just over the moon to actually have a proper, well-made Spider-Man film. It's definitely top 5, but I don't really have a top 2 still. It kind of bounces about the place.
I think it creeps into my top 5. It might even like, make third. I really do love it.
Yeah.
I have to watch it a few times again. I've watched Guardians so many times.
See, that's the thing. I can't rank them on one view, and you need a few to
No. I know, you do. You do.
Like, I think I need to watch Doctor Strange again, because that was almost an instant top five for me when I first saw it, but now it's kind of got pushed down a bit.
See, I was thinking the exact same thing before, because I'm off for 2 weeks over Christmas, but in January, I'm going to start watching one Marvel film every week, with the view being it builds up to the release of Infinity War.
Yeah,
just a shame that you won't get to watch Infinity Wars on the week it's actually released, William.
I found out of all the fucking cruel things, I'm going to America on my honeymoon.
Oh,
I'm in America when Infinity War comes out in the UK, but then when I'm back in the UK, it gets released in America, so I'm not going to see it for the first week. I've already had to speak to Tom, the guy that I go to the cinema with, and tell him that I won't have a hissy fit if he goes without me. But he says he doesn't want to cheat on me and go on his own.
He's so going to go. God. He's not going to go more than twice. He'll go at least twice. He might not go a third time. But
he might not,
because
he's got a baby, so he doesn't get to go out and play that often. So
I don't think it matters. I think I'd take the baby.
Put it this way.
Just sneak the baby in.
If he wasn't here, I'd go. I'd go on my own.
Hey, I'm going to be going. I'm just going to be abandoning work, my children, my wife. I'm just going to be living at the cinema, take a camp bed. Yeah, I mean, Ali Thompson, one of our wonderful guests and regular listeners from day one, said he might venture all the way down from, I think he lives in the north of Scotland. I think he's in Perthshire or somewhere like up that way, and comes to Manchester to watch it, which I just thought is incredible.
That'd be cool,
so, yeah, and, you know, we're all going to have to watch it and do a massive reaction to it, Stu. I think we get clips from everyone who's been on the show before and just do reactions to it, because it's going to go absolutely
like an Avengers podcast.
Yeah.
Like an AI Avengers.
Like literally have the AI Avengers. Yeah, I like that. We're going to do that and get Harinder to do the artwork. Right. Anything else to cover? Are we happy? I just want to go and watch it again after I've watched it.
When we're done, I'm going to open up various streaming websites and see if I can find
it. You might get one, yeah.
Yeah, just link me in.
Because if I can, I think I'm watching it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have one tiny thing to add, which is just a small thing. I don't know if anyone else picked up on it. When we first get introduced to Jeff Goldblum, the music in the background is pure imagination from Willy Wonka.
Yeah, Willy Wonka.
I think he's a definite massive influence on that kind of. That's a person who might have been able to actually play him if he was alive. Gene Wilder.
Gene Wilder had that kind of crazy eccentric edge to him, but kind of borderline between psychotic and good. I definitely think Jeff Goldblum is crazy.
He's just insane.
He's living the dream though, man. The guy's 65 years old. He's got a toddler, which is mental.
Oh, really?
And he's got, yes. And he has a wife who's in her 30s, who's a contortionist. And dancer. I mean, the guy.
That sounds crazy, but when you put him in with Jeff Goldblum,
and he plays piano as well. He plays concert piano at the Vegas show.
65.
I know he looks amazing for 65.
Jesus Christ!
I know.
He's been. I don't know if you saw. He's going to be in Jurassic World 2.
Yes, I saw it in the trailer.
Which is now I'm actually really excited. I was kind of like, oh, this looks awful. But after hearing that, it's kind of.
Do you see Goldblum?
His third Jurassic Park.
You're like, right, I'll watch it. I don't care anymore. Do you know what I mean? He's also in the Wes Anderson film
that's got to have Ian Malcolm in it. Every single one has got to have him in. Even if all he does is just wear that, you know, his leather pants.
That leather jacket.
And just sits there just looking swag.
Didn't he lose an arm or a leg in
he got a really
Jurassic
bad
Park
injury
2.
On his leg, but
did
I don't think he lost it.
No, I don't
really remember.
He was running
I saw you were going to tell me that Jeff Goldblum is the coolest amputee of all time then. I just didn't know where you were going with it. Well, like, didn't he lose an arm in the film?
He was running away from the T-Rex, wasn't he, being a dickhead, waving the flare, and the T-Rex ran alongside him.
When he tried to be clever with the flare.
And he went and launched him into one of the huts
trying to save the kids.
Broke his leg.
He was trying to show off to the girl. It's always the way. Right, we will leave you. Thank you very much for all the, I don't know, loads of interactions lately, Stu. You were getting quite emotional by all, and it's been really nice. We're 2 years and counting, I think, give or take.
Yeah, yesterday was our 2 year anniversary.
And considering we've fallen out on social media, we still come on and do these podcasts. There's a love-hate relationship. I mean, we can't be within, is it about 2 miles of each other? Is that the legal distance these days?
Well, my restraining order says you're not allowed within 500 yards of me.
Is that what it is? Okay. Yeah. Mine's a bit further than that. You know, I won't lean near my children.
I'm not even in the same fucking postcode.
Oh, exactly.
But it's okay. I don't want to come up to Stockport.
So you live in Salford, man. Don't even try.
I live in the nice part that's not on fire, although there is a smackhead rehabilitation centre across the road. I'm not even joking. There really is.
Lovely. Honestly, mate, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Thank you very much for your very continued support. I know you're big on the box and do this. And I don't know if you've been on movie night yet. Have you done Jason?
No, not yet. No.
Okay. We'll make that happen as well, obviously. Yeah. And yeah, man, I know you love everything entertainment and big LFC fan. Yeah. Thanks very much for coming on. We will have other new guests. There's loads of people lined up that me and Stu have been talking to, which is great. And hopefully Sam will come back on and we'll make
just
more.
A league bash. Yeah,
whatever works, man. And we'll just make more Father Ted references and I'll just be happy.
Do a Father Ted podcast if anyone wants to do it. Good for that.
Oh, mate. I don't know if Gags even knows what Father Ted is.
It's got cocaine in it. What do you call them? Raisins. That's my favourite.
Let's just do our own Father Ted. We say it's a comic pod, but we'll just do Father Ted for 2 hours. I could just talk about the Father Ted Christmas episode when they're stuck in the lingerie section for days and days and days.
Actually, I think I'm going to go and watch that episode now.
Oh,
I hear you're a racist now, Father.
Right,
there's the racist Irish accent there, just making a little entrance at the end.
To get through, literally, I mean, he dropped the C-bomb within 12 seconds, but to get to the end of the pod and there'd just be one racial connotation, didn't even do a Kiwi accent. I mean, Jesus Christ.
No, the thing is, if I try and do that, I was going to offend the Kiwis and the South Africans, so that'd be a 2-for-1. And at
you
least
probably
half
think
of
a bit
our,
of Australian in there, isn't
at least half of our listeners are from South Africa, so we really can't afford it. We've got at least 5 or 6 people from South Africa, so if we lose them...
We have contributors from South Africa. I mean, our two of our main contributors, and they just literally... I mean, I don't know how Marco keeps coming back, though. We just blame him for everything. Do you know what I mean?
Hashtag blame Marco.
Exactly.
It's an actual thing.
It is. Right. Thank you very much for listening, everyone. We went a little bit off kilter, as always, because we are improv as much as a Taika Waititi film. We will catch up with you soon when we, dare I say it, talk about Justice League. It's going to be a very awkward conversation. And then we will talk about films for next year, which will be a very happy conversation because we get to talk about more Infinity Wars. So, thanks very much for tuning in. Your continued support and everything. Just everything. Thanks very much. Take care. Speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.